Welcome to episode 50 of Gallifrey Public Radio. This week we take a look at the art form known as spin-offs and begin our five-part journey with Torchwood Children of Earth. But first, your hosts. I'm Jay Witten.
Are we talking adult like Torchwood or adult like Cinemax after 11 p.m.?
And with me are Melissa Mazza.
I demand to be referred to as Sagacity from now on.
And Keir Hansen.
The jockstrap of Rassilon is formidable and large.
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But if we get into anything too serious, don't worry. We'll warn you again. Welcome to episode 50 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where the fans demand more than we can cram into one show, so we're forced to make multiple, often subpar, duplicates in an attempt to cash in. This week I am Jay, and with me is Melissa. How are you doing, Melissa?
I am good. I'm also Melissa this week.
Unfortunately, Keir is not going to be with us. He is preparing for Dragon Con this week, so things getting a little bit crazy. Yeah. So this week we are, well, this is kind of a twofold episode. We are going to be taking a look at some of the spinoffs in our continuation of the Extended Hooniverse. We're going to look at some of the spinoffs that have come from Doctor Who and then launch into a week-by-week viewing viewing of Children of Earth. So this week we'll be talking about Day One. So
right. So we're going to be discussing the spinoffs, and then we're narrowing it down to Torchwood and narrowing it down to Children of Earth. And I think this will be a great introduction for people who, you know, maybe have never seen Torchwood even, or want to get back into it. Like, so watch it along with us tonight. We're talking about Day One and how there are four, right?
Five days. So, all right. So the first one that most people think of outside of Torchwood when you say Doctor Who is the Sarah Jane Adventures. Now, this is a spinoff done right. Yeah, I mean this one is just absolutely tremendous. So you've got back in the I believe it was in 1981 they had K-9 and Company, A Girl's Best Friend, and this was the spiritual predecessor to the Sarah Jane Adventures. I guess it's Sarah Jane loses her Aunt Lavinia and can't find her anywhere and is convinced that she's abducted. So she and some other characters along with K-9 go hunting her down, convinced that she's abducted by this coven of witches. Turns out that she just went on her lecture tour to America a couple days early. And it's just a very, very big letdown. But yeah, it was just a very blasé kind of show. And I think this was actually the pilot for a planned spinoff that just got scrapped because it was crap.
But that was Sarah Jane as well? Is that what you said?
Yeah, it was Sarah Jane.
See, I've never seen either of these. The most I know of it is when Sarah Jane and her son were in the the episodes where Harriet Jones was there and Martha Jones. And
yeah.
Apparently that was like what the show was really like.
But that's actually from the Sarah Jane Adventures, which was made by the BBC and from 2006 to 2011, and sadly was canceled because of Liz Sladen's death. So. But yeah, a lot of people call Doctor Who a children's show, which, there's plenty of nerd rage about that going around. This was actually the children's version of it. This was the one that was aimed at kids. So it was,
right.
Yeah, and it's actually done really well for what it is. Yeah, it's entertaining enough. It's, you can sit there and watch it as an adult with kids and you'll get a couple things out of it. It's not going to entertain you enough to be like, this is one of my favorite shows. But if your kids like Doctor Who and they want a little bit more, it's not a bad thing to sit and watch with them. So.
See, I would watch it on my own. I don't need kids. I have plenty of kids shows.
Yeah.
So, but it's not readily available, right? It's not on Netflix.
It's not on Netflix. It's not on Hulu. It's one that you really have to do some digging to try and find. So, at least on this side of the pond, I guess. But speaking of this side of the pond, one that's not really considered a spinoff by a lot of people, but really kind of is The Pond Life that we got this year or last year.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought of it, but that definitely does belong in the list.
And I mean, it's just, what, like a grand total of maybe like 10 minutes. There's not an awful lot to it, but it is something extra outside of the TV show that just gives us a little bit more, gives us a little bit more flavor and texture and just a little bit more to the world. But then one that really kind of comes up a lot is the K-9. K-9 has been trying to get his own show for a long time. There have been a lot of attempts and stuff, but it's actually Australia has been the one to make it. with Network 10. It started in 2010 and is actually still going. I think they only have one season, though. But the story behind this one is that it's the year 2050 and London has become a police state, and K-9 Mark I falls through a wormhole from Gallifrey into the home of this Professor Griffin, and joins him and some kids in working against the department, which is a government organization that's abusing aliens. So it's a little bit weird and a very loose tie-in. Just the fact that he's K-9, and it's even a redesigned K-9. It doesn't even look the same as what was on the show. And that he comes from Gallifrey. That's about the only tie-in that you really get. Other than that, it just seems to be a generic sci-fi show or a kid's show.
I mean, but it's definitely tied in, though, right? Like, they have the rights to that and everything. It's meant to be the same K-9.
Yeah, it's definitely meant to be the same K-9, but since the rights to K-9 aren't owned by the BBC, it doesn't really work in terms of, like, really fitting it in with the canon, I guess. But
gotcha.
Yeah, so it's a bit rough. They're working on a second season. At the last news I was able to find says that they're still working on season 2, and we'll see if it can improve on season 1 or not, but again, this is one that you're not really going to be able to find in the States. But that leads us to the one that we do know here in America and that we have all probably watched, and at least to some extent. I know most people have watched all the way through, and there's quite a few that they'll watch one or two episodes and they're like, yeah, no, this isn't Doctor Who. I'm done. But that's Torchwood. And this is the continuing story of Captain Jack Harkness.
Yeah, and I think if Sarah Jane Adventures is like the family-friendly version of Doctor Who, this is the grown-up version.
Oh yeah,
even darker than the original material.
And I mean that it's really obvious from square one that they were trying to make this an adult-centric program. You know, they were trying to make it something aimed at adults. And I mean, there's a lot of sex and a lot of violence, and you know, gratuitously so most of the time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they were really trying to say this is different than Doctor Who. This is not going to be just more of the same thing. It's completely different. So, yeah, and that unfortunately kind of stuck with them for a while, at least through Series 1, I know. Series 2, they kind of let off of it as much as they could, but it was still kind of ingrained into what the show was. But, you know, it's basically just the story of five people working at Torchwood. Yeah, and Torchwood has gone a different direction from what we saw established in Doctor Who. You know, Jack Harkness took it over, and he's actually trying to do something good with it now. You know, trying to stop the aliens that the Doctor, you know, doesn't have time to get to. You know, Superman can't always be there to stop the muggings on the street, so, you know, you've got the police to take care of that. You know, so, and that's kind of what Torchwood is. They're the alien police for Cardiff.
Right. It's acknowledged that this is like, you know, Cardiff Torchwood does things different than London Torchwood. Yeah. Like, you know, so it's funny. They know what's going on. And the best part of the series, I think, is Captain Jack himself. What say you to that? Or who, like, you know, because I think now we should, you know, get a little bit deeper into Torchwood, because we're going to be discussing Children of Earth. So there are some, like, really, really good characters, I think, in that show. Like,
for me personally, Jack Harkness is always, you know, less is more. He's a great character, but it's very, very, very easy to overdo it with him, because John Barrowman is such a big, you know, so charismatic and such a big personality, mm-hmm. and that carries over into Captain Jack. I mean, it's the role was written for him, you know,
right.
And so a little goes a long way. And then you take a show and center it around, well, I mean, it's really kind of centered around Gwen Cooper if you look at it, but, you know, it's Jack Harkness. You know, right. You can't get away from him being the center of attention whenever he's on screen. So yeah, it's very easy to get overwhelmed with him very early on. And I've heard that said by a lot of people that, you know, they can't handle that much Barrowman all at once.
See, I mean, my take on it is I like him in Torchwood because he was too over the top in Doctor Who. And it's nice to see, like, a more human side.
Yeah, and that's a big distinction, is that Jack Harkness in Torchwood is not the same character that he was from Doctor Who. You know, he's a much more, you know, gritty, broody, not nice character. You know, I mean, he was a con man in Doctor Who, and in this one, he's kind of like, you know, Batman. You know, he's like, I'm not going to take crap. You know, I'm still going to, you know, mouth off and make the comments and things like that, but, you know, he can also get really, you know, really dark at times, too.
Yeah.
And so we've got two series of this that go through, and they're kind of Monster of the Week episodes, and that's basically the formula that they follow. They've got some loose story arcs. We've got Martha Jones pops up at some point in it in a series two, but for the most part, it's just a Monster of the Week kind of thing. But then after that, we do wind up getting Series 3 of Torchwood, which is Children of Earth. And instead of going with the full 13-episode big story or just the general thing that they were going with, they decided to do 5 episodes of the best TV and storytelling that I have ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, this is a complete... Like you said, it was Monster of the Week. Like, there was a certain format that this show had, and then suddenly they just stopped and did this, 5-part movie that was just, unlike anything we did. Like, I'm sure people give up on the show, and then, I mean, while I may not agree that this is, the best television ever, this is some good writing. Like, if someone is listening to this now, you need to turn this off and watch it before you get spoiled, because it's, it's worth it. It's worth it to sit through what's going on in these crazy scenarios.
Yeah, so we'll just go ahead and say from here on out, this is going to be very spoiler-heavy and explicit. This series was very, very dark and very horrific at points, and we're not going to hold back. So there's going to be some explicit topics and some vulgar language. So if you're not into any of that, go ahead and turn it off, and we'll be back in a few weeks with the regular show. But from here on out, we're going to be talking about Children of Earth, and things are going to get messed up. So that being said, give some time for everybody to shut off their MP3 players.
We make it sound like it's the most horrific television ever.
Well, that's the thing, is it's one of those that you want people to watch because it is such good TV, but you know how horrible it is, so you kind of hand it to them wincingly, go ahead and watch this, but I'm sorry, I'm so, so sorry. But, I mean, it's one of those that you can't help but get wrapped up in.
Yeah. Not least of the reasons of which Peter Capaldi, our old new friend, is in this.
Yes.
So let's get that out of the way now.
And a tremendous, tremendous character that he plays, and just a basic middleman civic worker that just, he's got some power, but not as much as he likes to think that he has. He's just he's just a middleman and gets abused by the prime minister. He goes to meet the prime minister at one point, explaining to him what's going on, and the prime minister basically says, no, I'm not putting my name on this thing. It's going to come onto your head if you do it. So basically just a recap for people that have watched it before but haven't watched it in a while, because it's taken me 2 years to watch it again, and it's still within the first couple minutes I'm like, I don't know if I can do this. But so it starts off with these children in Scotland. There's a bus in Scotland, and these children get off, walk into the light, and one kid gets scared and runs off. And then we go to modern day, and you kind of see, typical Torchwood kind of stuff going on. And then at one point, all the children stop. Like, every child across the world just stops, doesn't do anything, just stands there. And is it the first one that they actually start screaming, or is it just that they stop?
They just stop, yeah.
And so, and everyone's kind of freaking out, and it was just very specific time. It was from 8:40 to 8:41. Yeah, and so only Torchwood and UNIT are the ones that have the capacity to put it together what's going on, that it's a global thing. And then again at 10:30, they all stop again. But this is the one where they start screaming.
Yeah, so Torchwood already knows what's going on, and then suddenly they see it actually happen, and it is horrific when these kids let out the scream that lasts way longer than you think it should.
Oh yeah. And then and so we've got you see Frobisher, who is trying to deal with all of this, gets called down to a lab by some other little government worker or something, and he says that they were broadcasting on the 456. And apparently this is something that they're aware of previously. So the Frobisher winds up taking this to the prime minister and says, this is going on. We need to issue a blank slate. We need to clear off everything that's happened before. And that's when the prime minister says, no, I'm not putting my name on this.
Yeah.
And Frobisher's kind of like, well, I guess it falls on me. Yep, just don't tell me about it. It's like, oh, douchebag. I mean, that's one thing about the prime minister in this, is just he is an asshole.
I mean, I think this does a great job of showing that they're all assholes in this government.
Oh, yeah. And
I can't even single him out.
And that's kind of the thing is, like, anytime I tell someone about this story, it's, you know, I'm like, yes, it's horrible. It's wretched. It's this great story, but it's not even the primary story that's so horrifying. I mean, it's wretched and it's awful, but it's not that makes it so bad. It's the horror of it comes from the realistic aspects, the people's reactions, it's the inhumanity of the humans that makes it so bad. And this show does a really good job of putting the spotlight on that, showing just how duplicitous and horrible these people can be.
You summed it up perfectly, that the plot is not about the external threat, but the internal.
Yeah, so then at some point we see Jack and Yanto are at the hospital. Somebody has, you know, this old person has died, and they seem like they're acting very broken up about it. Yeah, saying he was a neighbor and that it was this horrible loss and whatever. And then as the doctor leaves, they cut him open with a laser saw and pull out what they call a hitchhiker. They don't say what it is. They're just like, oh, yeah, nope, there it is. Put it in the Tupperware container. Let's go. And the doctor starts to freak out. And he's like, holy crap, you guys are Torchwood, aren't you? And he continues trying to talk to him. And they kind of blow him off and head out. And then later on, the doctor shows up at Torchwood and he's trying to, he's wandering around the harbor trying to find him. You can tell, like, he knows where to look, but he doesn't know exactly how to find them. Part of the thing that makes this so great, though, is all of the detail and stuff that they cram into it. I mean, there's so much that they put into it. You know, every little bit has a purpose. Every little bit has a reason for being in there and pushes the story forward.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even when Gwen goes out and is talking to Dr. Patanjali, there's a reason for it. You know, we finally see, when Frobisher does, issue the blank sheet, one of the Lois Habiba, the little office worker, finds out that that's actually a kill order and that Jack's name is on it.
Yeah, a lot of the Lois Habiba stuff, too, seems like, why are they showing us this? And then it all starts to come together.
Yeah. So, they issue a kill order for Jack, which, we all know that doesn't mean anything. Well, they at this point, Dr. Patanjali calls Jack and tells him that, he needs him at the hospital. There's a guy that's just died. So Jack goes and gets shot in the back by Dr. Patanjali.
Yeah. And I gotta say, I did not see that coming.
Yeah, it was one of those moments like, okay, what's going on? Oh, he just shot him. So then we don't even know who these people are. There's a group of quote-unquote anti-terrorists that come in and, basically implant something in Jack's stomach. And then as he goes about his business, or he wakes up and realizes that they shot Dr. Patanjali as well to cover up, basically. So he's not sure what's going on. There's no scar or anything from whatever they put into him. He just goes about business as normal. Well, Gwen has found the child who had run away in the opening sequence. He's an old guy living in a mental institution, but he's reacting the same way as the children. Like, all the children are going nuts and this one guy. So she goes and hunts him down. And apparently he has, like, this crazy, overdeveloped sense of smell kind of thing and can smell the aliens coming, can smell, Jack when he's around. Yeah. And then he tells Gwen that she's pregnant. So Gwen's freaking out. She gets back to Torchwood and basically, like, starts scanning herself and finds out she's pregnant. Well, Jack comes in, sees what's going on, gets all excited for her, and puts his hand on the scanner as well. And that's when the alarms start going off. And apparently they have planted a bomb inside of Jack's stomach. So he, starts kicking Gwen and Yanto out, finally gets them outside, and then gets blowed up. Like, the hub of Torchwood, everything is just demolished.
Yeah.
And was that the end? I can't remember. See, we watched 3 episodes last night. Now I can't figure out where they are.
Yeah, it blows up, and all the children start chanting again, "We are coming."
Right.
Or we are coming back.
Yeah. Yeah, so then after that, the children are going off again and saying, yeah, we are coming, we are coming, we are coming back. And that's how the first one ends.
Dun, dun, dun.
So, I mean, it's a great setup. There's a lot of great information put into it. Yeah, and that's really what it is. They're building the foundation for the story. Yeah, and everything that they put into it pays off at some point, either in this episode or later on down the road. There's nothing left in this. You know, you've got so many shows that, you know, especially even with Doctor Who, there's, you know, plot holes all over the place, and this really gets put solidly together.
Yeah. And I like, in this opening episode, like, they freaking destroy the Torchwood. Like, so many things happen, like Gwen being pregnant, Jack getting blown up. Like, it all has so many ramifications that, like, you just know that we're not going back to normal Torchwood the way it used to be. It's like, stuff's changing.
Yeah. And, you know, Keir wanted to make sure that we put in his thoughts in this. Said, you know, I pointed out that the show takes its creepy turn right from the get-go. It sets the tone for the final season that I thoroughly respect. I may risk saying that this is RTD's best writing. I've got to back him up on that. Yeah, I mean, the writing in this is solid. I mean, there's nothing extraneous at all. You know, it's riveting, it's compelling. You know, there's nothing that he did wrong with this one. I can't criticize it at all, you know, aside from being so horribly creepy and just, you know, like I said, I watched this once before and I sat down last night, and even episode one, where you really don't get any of the information, you know, it's all just, you know, building, but it's... knowing what's coming is just kind of like, oh, I don't know if I can watch this again.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I have to agree with both of you. The writing is top notch. It's superb. It is too intense for me. I'm glad I've already seen it, because I think if I were watching it for the first time now, it might be too much to handle.
Yeah, well,
or not even too much to handle, but just it would be a lot to think about for a little while.
Yeah, and I mean, that's one reason why it is so good, is because there is so much crammed into it. Yeah, it's especially just starting out, is you're trying to pick apart all of this stuff. And I mean, thankfully, it's all right there on Netflix. You don't have to wait a week to see the next episode. You know, it's all right there. But I mean, can you imagine sitting down and watching day one and then having to wait to see what happens next? I mean, they did a great job of driving this series. But that's about it for day one. I mean, like I said, it's all just foundation at this point. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's good on Keir that today's the day that he had to miss, and not something more exciting.
Yeah, definitely. But so there's some news that's come out. Not a lot, but some. The first one being that Peter Capaldi is on the cover of Doctor Who magazine as the new Doctor. So they're really starting to ramp this up and display him as the 12th Doctor. It's once the secret came out, once they revealed it, they're like, okay, there's no point in holding back now. And so they're really trying to, you know, pump up the publicity at this point.
Yeah, so it's official. Everyone's excited.
Now, and one thing I do really respect the Doctor Who magazine for doing is they said that, you know, until Christmas, he's not the Doctor. He's Peter Capaldi. He's going to be the next Doctor, but he is not the Doctor yet. Do not call him that. And I mean, I think that's right. You know, Matt Smith is the Doctor. He is still the Doctor. He hasn't left yet. Just, you know, he's the Doctor. Let it be. So definitely respect for that.
Yeah.
Then the BFI screening for the Ninth Doctor was last week, and they actually had a great little message from Chris Eccleston.
Yeah, this made me happy, this news, because everyone thinks of Chris Eccleston as, you know, anti-Doctor and whatever. But he, you know, was he there at the screening, or he just recorded
something? It was a video that he had recorded for him, so he wasn't completely ignoring it. He just couldn't bother to find the time to show up.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay, I think they read it out for him. So he's talking about who was he talking about?
He was talking about the producer, Joe.
Look for his last name.
Ahirne.
Okay, is that how you pronounce that?
I have no idea if that's how you pronounce it. I apologize right now, but that's what it looks like. So I'm going with Ahirne.
Okay, so he said, "I love the BFI. I love the Doctor, and hope you enjoy this presentation." Joe Ahirne directed 5 of the 13 episodes of the first series. He understood the tone the show needed completely: strong, bold, pacey visuals coupled with wit, warmth, and a twinkle in the performances. Misses. If Joe agreed to direct the 100th anniversary special, I will bring my Sonic and a stairlift, providing the Daleks don't bring theirs. I, the Ninth Doctor, vow to save the universe and all you apes in it.
Yeah, so
So we got him for the 100th anniversary. We could just bring on.
Yeah. So I like the fact that, you know, he's still acknowledging that he's the Ninth Doctor. He's not written it off and, you know, tried to ignore it completely. He's still like, yes, I played the Doctor. I'm acknowledging that. But 50 years isn't a big enough milestone for me to bother showing up. You've got to get to 100 before it's worth my time. It's like, really, dude? Really? This just bothered me so much. You know,
yeah, I can see that.
I mean, because we've got, you know, it's the BFI for the first, you know, the first Doctor from New Who, and, you know, Billy Piper doesn't show up, Chris Eccleston doesn't show up, RTD doesn't show up. We've got, you know, the producer that hasn't worked on the show in, you know, 5, 6, 7 years or whatever. Yeah, the director who did 5 out of 13 episodes, and then the actor who was the, you know, so short-lived companion that he was only in 2 episodes. It's like, dude, I mean, they went straight to the C-list for this one. It was just like, man, it just seems like a smack in the face, really.
Yeah, I mean, well, I can see that, but I mean, I think it was cool of Christopher Eccleston to say anything at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely more than we've gotten from him since he left the show, but it's still, it was just like, you know, he literally phoned it in, you know? but anyway, we'll move on before I start getting really upset about it. So Stephen Moffat has actually acknowledged the regeneration limit. So, he was in an interview, and it seems more like it was a question placed to him, like, do you acknowledge the convention that the Doctor can only regenerate 12 times? To which Moffat simply replied, yes.
So, right. So are we making a bigger deal of this than it should be?
Well, rule one being what it is, yes, we're making way too big a deal of it. But the fact that he's acknowledging it, you know, is a big deal. But he also said that, you know, he had also thanked Russell Davies for putting in the thing in the Sarah Jane Adventures about the Doctor being able to regenerate indefinitely. So it's like, I don't know. You know, it's rule one. There's no way of telling. But anyway, he also said during that interview, though, they were talking about Peter Capaldi's Scottish accent. And Moffat said, I'd be very surprised if he didn't keep it. So we might have another Scottish, or we might have a Scottish Doctor, first one since the Seventh Doctor.
See,
or Scottish sounding, I'll say that.
But that's interesting to me because he said it, or it comes off as so dismissive. Like, doesn't he have a say in it? Or, you know, is this Capaldi's choice? Or like,
well, I think what he's saying is that, you know, he might have a say in it, but he's going to leave it up to Capaldi. He's like, you know, I have no preference one way or the other, so I'd be surprised if he didn't try and keep his own voice. But I mean, that's the way that it seems to me. But he, during the same interview, he said that the door is open for a return to the Doctor's daughter, Jenny. But he said that Romana's out. He said he's given no thought to Romana, and the Time Lords are dead in his mind.
See, that makes a lot of sense, too, regarding the regenerations, because like we were talking about Neil Gaiman's theory a couple weeks back, that the regeneration was set by the Time Lords, and there are no more Time Lords, so... So for Moffat to say, you know, it's going to be no Rennie because the Time Lords are all dead, like, maybe that's how he plans to get around the regeneration limit as well.
Yeah, it's going to come down to one of two things. It's either going to be a very weak and almost imperceptible hand-waving of, nope, here he is, here's a 14th Doctor, and we're just, you know, going to pretend nothing happened. Or it's going to be a big thing where the Time Lords come back, and he saves them from the Time War, does some big thing, and they offer him, like, a new set of regenerations, where it becomes this big, long ordeal of, you know, making a big spectacle of it. But I don't know. Well, we've still got at least, you know, well, possibly one more Doctor to see. We'll have to see how this whole John Hurt thing plays out, but we'll see. But more Peter Jackson rumors have creeped up. Well, the same one, just more fire behind it now. Peter Jackson said that he'll direct an episode of Doctor Who as long as he gets a Dalek. And Moffat, the only reason why this came back up is because Moffat had commented on it. He said that, you know, he's serious about it. I was at the Hobbit premiere, and he just wants a Dalek. So he said that's what he wants. We give him a Dalek, and he'll direct an episode. He said that the problem is that for him to direct the episode, chances are it would have to be in New Zealand. An around-the-world journey, which Moffat said was entirely possible. So because Moffat brought it up and said, yes, it's possible, now it's, you know, the whole fervor is going again.
Now we can freak out.
Yeah. Yep, we can all freak out that Peter Jackson's going to direct an episode, you know, for who knows which series, and then it'll all kind of die off slowly like it did last time. and then somebody else will bring it back up, and it'll happen all over again.
And then it'll be a complete surprise when he does direct an episode. I'll be like, hey, I think I remember thinking he would back
then. Wait, he hasn't already done one? Dang. I don't know. Apparently there's an image out that is somebody had taken, I guess it was a special screening or a trailer or something of the 50th anniversary special. And it is just a picture of all three Doctors on screen with Matt Smith, David Tennant, and John Hurt. And it's a very grainy, like, cell phone picture of a screen across a room. And they're all three there. And I first heard about it and I was like, oh, stuff. And then I pulled up the picture and I'm like, that's it. That's what we're excited about. Like, I can do a better job with Photoshop in 20 minutes.
I think it is Photoshopped.
Well, no, I mean, this, I can't find the story behind it. All I've been able to find is the image, but the story that I've heard so far is that this is actually a legitimate image that somebody has, you know, flipped their top because it happened. But, this is actually a screen capture from the 50th anniversary special, but I don't know. It doesn't seem like a big deal to me. It's like, yes, it's cool that they're all on screen, but I'm like, it's just a few more months and I'm going to see this in context. So, I can't get fired up about this kind of image right now.
Still though, we take what we can get at this point.
True. So, and then in the non-news of the week, apparently there is a sonic screwdriver talking pizza cutter.
Need it.
Okay. I don't see the draw, but I mean, the description on this says that based on the 11th Doctor's sonic screwdriver, this is a must-have for any pizza-loving Whovian out there. Like, I'm not sure I see what the tie-in is here. It's like, it's the handle from his sonic screwdriver and a pizza cutter on it. I'm like,
does there need to be a tie-in? Come on.
We've all seen the Enterprise pizza cutter. Yeah, the one where the main dish of the Enterprise is the cutting wheel, and I'm like,
right, okay, and that actually like fits in with it.
It's I can understand that. This is just, it's a sonic screwdriver with a circular blade on it. I'm like, I how do you get there from here? I don't see it. But I don't know. It's, and especially the fact that it's a talking pizza cutter. Like, why does the sonic screwdriver talk? I don't get it. Like, what?
It probably makes the sounds.
I don't know. It says talking. That's not, you know, sound to me. That's speech. So I'm like, I don't want Matt Smith quotes while I'm cutting my pizza. Like, sitting there cutting my pizza. Oh, fish fingers and custard. That's great. Like, eating.
Call Forbidden Planet and ask them about it.
See what happens. Yeah, we really should. What are the sound bites exactly that the pizza cutter uses? I need technical specifications. I came across this and I was like, really? I don't know. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, no, you're right about the Enterprise or whatever with the blade on it. Like, it actually goes together. But yeah. This is cute. I like it. Any merchandise I like.
It's worth the 13 pounds, right? Anyway, so that's the news, folks, as it is. Yeah, so, next week, Keir should be back with us and have some terrific Dragon Con stories to share as well. And we will be talking about day two of Children of Earth when things really start to pick up and get interesting and you really start to see the shape of things to come.
Yeah.
So
we can't wait.
Yeah. So until then, let us know. Yeah, give us some feedback on the spinoffs and things that you like. You know, have you seen any of these? Have you seen Sarah Jane Adventures or the Australian Canine? Or, you know, let us know which ones that you liked and what you liked about them, which ones you thought were completely awful and we should steer away from. And especially, you know, send your feedback on Children of Earth. I know this is a very, very big deal for a lot of people. Yeah, this is, like I've said, I consider this some of the best TV that I have ever seen in my life. You know, some of the best writing and storytelling that I've ever seen on television. So, yeah, a lot of people have very strong opinions, especially once you get to the end. You know, if you come out of this not wanting to, you know, at least write angry worded letters to people, you're clearly a robot. But
yeah, so send us your feedback on Children of Earth. I'm looking forward to hearing a lot of, because I mean, those are some pretty big words. You're saying this is like the greatest television writing and stuff. So I wonder if there's anyone out there who's going to challenge that, or, you know, if they agree with you, why?
Yeah. Yeah, so definitely send us emails at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. We're on Twitter at Gallifrey Radio. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on our website at gallifreypublicradio.com. We're over on iTunes as well. So just send us feedback wherever you can get a hold of us. Let us know what you think about it. And until then, this has been episode 50 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying we are coming back next week.
Nice. And this is Melissa saying, I'm Lois Habiba, and this is my first day.
All right, we'll see you guys next week. Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. Have something you need to say, something we got wrong, or something you just need to weigh in on? Send us an email at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. You can also find us on Twitter at Gallifrey Radio, on Stitcher Smart Radio under Gallifrey Public Radio. Find us on iTunes, where you can leave us comments and reviews. You can also head over to our homepage at gallifreypublicradio.com, where you can leave comments on each episode and get into discussions on the things that we bring up. You can also keep up to date on all the latest news and what's going on in the community. Music by Beyond the Epilogue and Retcon Addict.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2013.